Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Tuesday morning. It's July 7th. 66 degrees currently here in Old Town Park City under mostly sunny skies. We've got some pretty clouds out there. Heber City reporting 65 degrees. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, it's meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy Tuesday, KPCW listeners. It's time for your forecast for the Wasatch Back on this Tuesday. We're going to be looking at mostly sunny to partly cloudy skies as we go throughout today. Very similar to our Monday, we're going to have a very slim chance that we could see an isolated high-base pop-up shower or storm. Primary concerns would be some gusty winds and maybe some lightning strikes, possibly a brief downpour, but mainly gusty wind and lightning. And again, these are going to be isolated, very few and far between. Highs will be in the upper 80s for us in Park City. As we go throughout your Tuesday afternoon, we're looking at high temperatures in the low 90s in the Heber Valley. As we go into your Wednesday, look for mostly sunny skies to return across the Wasatch Back. We'll be seeing those temperatures staying on the warm side, upper 80s in Park City. We'll see those highs back into the low 90s in the Heber Valley. Now, once we start making our way into your Thursday, we're going to start to see an upper-level ridge of high pressure starting to build in from the south and southwest. It's slowly going to start moving in, so on your Thursday, look for mostly sunny skies. High temperatures will still be in the upper 80s in Park City. We'll still have those highs in the low 90s in the Heber Valley. By the time we get towards Friday, we start to really notice the change. Lots of sunshine expected across the area. High temperatures will be back into the low 90s in Park City, and we'll see those highs in the mid to upper 90s in the Heber Valley. But then the real heat builds in. The heat wave arrives just in time for the weekend. As we go into your Saturday, look for lots of sunshine. Park City, we're talking high temperatures in the mid-90s. We'll see those high temperatures in the triple digits in the Heber Valley, around 100 to 103 degrees for a high temperature on your Saturday. As we move into your Sunday, we're talking high temperatures that could be approaching the upper 90s to near 100 in Park City. And we're talking high temperatures around 102 to 105 in the Heber Valley. Are you ready for some real heat? That could be some extreme heat across the area. We'll start to try to cool it down just a tad heading into beginning of next week. Let's get your latest forecast for the Wasatch Back on ABC4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Stay tuned. In just a couple of minutes, we'll be checking in with Summit County Community Development Director Peter Barnes with an update on some of the development projects happening throughout the county. Wasatch County Manager Justin Graybrow previewing Wednesday's County Council meeting, and from Summit Land Conservancy, CEO Cheryl Fox discussing some open space issues. Well, Summit County transportation officials say the intersection outside Walmart at Kimball Junction is a crash waiting to happen. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports that they have got a quick fix.
Landmark Drive snakes around the traffic circles in western Kimball Junction before diving down the hill between Whole Foods and the AC Hotel. That slope means poor sight lines for cars on a small side road Landmark Loop, says Summit County Transportation Planner Carl Miller.
Left turning or through traffic from Landmark Loop that either goes into Walmart or takes a left southbound on Landmark Drive. It is really dangerous.
Because not many cars make that left turn onto Landmark Drive, he says there isn't a substantial crash history there, but Miller has seen near misses himself. The proposed fix is simple enough. Signage that only allows right turns off Landmark Loop. There would be no more driving across the street into Walmart or making a left.
We're working with our engineering team right now. I don't know exactly their timeline. If we get feedback that there is some additional reason for keeping this, I'd be happy to hear it. Although safety oftentimes outweighs convenience, especially for an issue like this where it's a collision, it's a crash waiting to happen.
Pedestrian and motorist safety on Landmark Drive is taking on new importance since hundreds of housing units are coming to that side of Kimball Junction in the coming years. Miller says the county is seeking grant funding to study all of Landmark as the development known as Dakota Pacific gets underway. He also recommended various changes to Landmark Drive to the Summit County Council during a discussion about redeveloping the nearby outlet mall last month. The area has seen incremental safety improvements over the years. That includes flashing pedestrian beacons between Walmart and the transit center, as proposed by a local high schooler. The Dakota Pacific development will also include a new pedestrian bridge across State Route 224. Summit County is a financial supporter of KPCW. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
On the phone now with an update from the Summit County Planning Department, I have Community Development Director Peter Barnes. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning, Leslie. Hope you're well today.
Yeah, sure am. Thank you. So any new applications that have come through the door since we last talked?
I generally start off with nothing to get excited about. I have a tendency to do that, and I'm probably going to do it again. The truth is, any application that comes through the door, if you're the neighboring property owner, then you are going to care about it. I would say, genuinely speaking, in this case, nothing exciting. A few low impact permits for houses that are outside subdivisions, a fairly typical run-of-the-mill process. Nothing that will get people really worked up, but something that may fly by the radar if people aren't paying attention. Definitely not a new application. In fact, a very old application. I want to give people a heads up for the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission. Next week is a public hearing and possible recommendation for the rezone for the Crossroads project at Silver Creek. And if people are aware of this one, this has been on the Planning Commission's radar on and off since 2023. So it's finally got round to a position where we can actually bring the rezone process in front of the Planning Commission for a public hearing. And if people had been paying attention to this a couple of years ago or on and off over the years, they might miss it. So next Tuesday, public hearing, it is a rezone. It's the property that's essentially the northwest corner of the intersection of US 40 and I-80. And it will involve, I believe it's about 70 market rate multifamily units and 20 affordable housing units plus some commercial space, about 35,000 square feet of commercial space. It is a rezone. We do them rarely, but people should actually be aware of it. If you live in the neighborhood or you just have an interest, please pay attention and feel free to come in and give comment at the public hearing.
Okay, so the rezone is going from what to what?
It's actually rural residential. If you're aware of the fact that most of the property in the Snyderville Basin is effectively rural residential, anything that is proposed to be something other than one house per 20 acres has to rezone. So this is now going to community commercial. The original application in 2023 was attempting the NMU zone that we have, the neighborhood mixed use zone. That came up against all sorts of little hiccups and problems that made the project completely not viable. With a rezone and a reduction in density and heights, the NMU zone wasn't actually required by the applicant to achieve what he was seeking to achieve. So they're going to community commercial.
All right. So who's the applicant on this?
This is Tony Tyler. It's that's a name that's familiar. It's actually CDP. Silver Creek LLC. It's an LLC, but it's Tony Tyler, who's a familiar name in the development world locally.
Okay, yeah, I do recall the project. It seemed like it was a lot more dense, though, when it was originally proposed.
Originally, yes, very much so. So the density has been dropped quite significantly. There are a couple of outstanding questions, but this might actually lead on to, I don't want to direct your conversation, obviously, this might lead on to the reason why on Wednesday we'll be presenting the rezone process code amendment to the county council that came out of the Planning Commission a couple of weeks ago, because the number of times and the number of cycles that the Silver Creek project went through, this is one of the examples of why we need to adjust the process to get the basic question of the zone, is it worth changing the zone, bring it to the public's attention and bring a more generalized question earlier in the process so we can actually influence the later result.
Okay, so and this is, I think, also in anticipation of Klein-Dolly?
That was one of the other triggers, because Tony Tyler on the Klein-Dolly project, he's the lead contractor that was chosen out of the RFP that the county put out, together, Columbus Pacific, with his partners in the development, the Park City Fire District, the Recreation District, Mountain Lands, Community Housing Trust and Habitat, they came to the table. Tony led that charge, but it's his experience that caused us to say, we know we're going to have to rezone the property. why have we made the process so difficult for everyone? And that includes ourselves. So the process itself shouldn't be hard. The design and the project should be the difficult piece. The process that we're going through should not be unnecessarily awkward and expensive.
Yeah, and that's what I think, as I recall, part of that genesis for it was just so developers didn't have to spend tens of thousands of dollars creating plans that, you know, would not be approved. So the idea is to at least see whether or not there's some agreement.
And the reality on a complex project is that you're well into the hundreds of thousands of dollars, you know, shy or if not over $1 million to get a set of construction plans that will get you in front of the council. And of course, the council may or may not approve a rezone, but with a condition that you change it all again. You know, add a few units here, or, you know, move a road over there, and there you back into another couple of hundred thousand dollars changing all the drawings. If we can get that level of information, just the outline press, are we interested in the rezone? Under what conditions would we? Does the project as proposed generally fit on the site? If it does, can we move forward to the next step? And that's really what we're trying to change on Wednesday.
Okay. So that's going to happen before this Kleindolly property application comes back?
Yeah, absolutely. Because while this changes the process for the rezone, the zone that Tony's, you know, and his partners, including the county, will be looking for. We don't have an existing zone that actually satisfies all the needs for the project. So we have to create an entirely new zone itself. And that's a separate exercise from the process. It's not dissimilar to what we're doing with the Lost Creek community over in Browns Canyon, where they've actually proposed a zone. And, you know, that's the discussion we're having at the Planning Commission on the east side, is this a zone we want to adopt? If so, where would we put it? In the case with the process on the basin side, we're going to change the process to allow someone to come in with a plan, but the plan that is currently on the table will not fit under any of our existing zones. So we actually have to create a zone as well. All very complicated, very nerdy. Anyone who gets excited by this stuff needs to get a better life. But
Okay. Let's move on and tell us, what can you tell us about the Park City School District's 55 acres near Silver Summit? The school board recently met with the YMCA and a development partner, Mercy Housing, to build some affordable housing and a regional hub for YMCA's community services there.
Well, that was an interesting surprise to me. I'm grateful when I read stories in the media about land use planning in Summit County because it helps keep me informed. But we have not been approached by the school district on any proposal for this site in many years. A number of years ago, you know, they acquired the property. It's 55 acres, as you say. It's south of Trailside, you know, adjacent to the 40 corridor there, you know, adjacent to the Round Valley open space type area. Currently zoned for two houses, and clearly, you know, that wouldn't suit anyone from, you know, with any more ambition than that. We had talked to the school district a number of years ago at the potential school site, and 10 years since we've had that conversation, that would have been a conditional use permit. Whatever they're proposing today, it's in my mind, it's property owners discussing ideas for their project. We haven't been approached. We would expect to be approached if you know, the school district want to deal with consultants, potential partners, and run a plan, then hopefully they'll come and see us early in the process, because that would involve a rezone, quite definitely. And the number of units I believe they were talking about create some challenges over there, mostly access to the property and, you know, the typical service and infrastructure developments. But the word is out in the community. I've already been receiving comments, and not necessarily complaints about it, but significant inquiries. And I'm currently in a position where, it's absent any information or communication from the school district on this project, I can't really answer any of the details.
Hmm. Now, another interesting conversation happened with the Summit County Housing Authority when Crisco Development met with the Housing Authority Board about the proposed Lincoln View development, which features affordable housing, retail space, and a child care center. Is that putting the cart before the horse as well?
Clearly, you know, without exercising any kind of power struggle, I'd say probably. I see no reason. People have begun to recognize that rather than put a finished design on the table and fight against your enemies, maybe you bring allies to the table with you when you have a proposal. And I like to think that's probably more of the intent of what the developer, the owner of this property was trying to do by go build allies. Is there support amongst the housing authority for a project of this nature? But they've already done a significant amount of technical work on it. Shortly after that meeting, like literally days after that meeting, the owner did actually come and sit down with Ray Milliner, principal planner here, to discuss what we call a pre-application meeting, where, you know, the project that was presented to the Housing Authority was actually presented to us in a semi-formal setting. And from that basis, we'll say, yeah, if you are going to do this, then these are the steps you're going to have to follow. The not surprised to me, but there was a certain sense of urgency presented during that meeting, and I'm not sure, given our current processes and what's involved, how realistic that sense of urgency is going to be. But we'll see how that develops. We haven't received any formal application yet.
Okay. And again, you're saying that they went to the Housing Authority just to build a partnership and kind of get support for the project?
I'm assuming that to be the case. The Housing Authority are not the approval body. This is a planning commission process, a council process. Obviously, it's run through the department too. The Housing Authority have influence and policies related to housing. What we're trying to do, if there's a significant form of affordable housing or even market rate housing of the type that the Housing Authority is promoting or approving, then I don't see harm in doing that. But I also want people to be realistic in their expectations. A project doesn't meet the code simply because lots of people like it. It just might give it leverage and pressure and a reason to adjust the code if necessary. But popularity is not a legal standard in our approval process.
All right. As you mentioned, the Lost Creek development there on the eastern side of the county, Browns Canyon, Where does that proposal stand, and I guess what are the key decisions still ahead for the county council?
The planning commission, the East Side Planning Commission, are actually going to have a public hearing on August 6th. It's in Camas. We've actually tried to maintain a regular meeting schedule in Camas because this project essentially is on the south side of Eastern Summit County, so it seems that most of the interest was coming from that direction. Our meetings alternate between Colville and Camas on the East Side Planning Commission. We'd hope to get to a planning commission stage a little earlier than we are now. But at the last meeting where the Planning Commission discussed it at a work session, they did actually come back with some very significant comments and contributions to the developer and suggestions. If you want this zone adopted, we recommend A, B, C, D, et cetera. So I presume the applicant has made adjustments as far as they are willing to do so, but there will be a notice public hearing on August the 6th. And that's actually the first public hearing we've had. It wouldn't surprise me to have a second public hearing, depending on the level of input, but we could also move, depending on the reaction, we could move it forward to the council very quickly. The reason we didn't have the public hearing at the last meeting is because we were so close to July the 4th, we didn't want people's holiday plans to interrupt their ability to provide comment.
Okay, real quick, Summit County Manager Shane Scott has approved the amendment to the Six Ridge Partners application, formerly known as Dakota Pacific, that would allow, I believe, about 50,000 square feet of nonprofit space. So what's next with this?
The we call it the DPRE project out of, you know, shorthand and habit. Six Ridge Partners, High Valley Transit, the county, there's the P3, the public-private partnership, and then there's the residential portion of the project. You know, we the P3 portion, the one that the county and High Valley Transit and DPRE are working together on, that's under refinement. We're in, you know, design development type drawings, you know, as that very complex interaction of projects actually comes together. So a lot of moving parts on that one. We're probably a certain distance away from applications, but definitely refining the project, you know, including that multi-story structured parking lot that's, you know, essentially underground there. That's a complex technical argument or process. On the residential side of the project, which is driven almost entirely by Six Ridge by themselves and a couple of their interested people, we do actually have sketch plan applications for the first set of the housing project that they're allowed to proceed with, and that the first piece coming out of the ground, if we can move the process along fast enough, would actually be their affordable housing, one of their affordable housing developments on that side, towards the west side. Yeah. So it is progressing. If people are interested, feel free to get in touch. We can tell you where we are and anything, but any project that actually rises to the level of that public involvement, again, those notices and hearings will be published as we normally do.
Well, so does this project ever come back to the county council, or is this being solely handled by the planning department?
Those are two extremes. there are various processes involved. But some of the processes, most of the processes will probably involve a review and a recommendation by the Planning Commission with an approval by the county manager. Certain projects, what we call a low-impact permit approval, typically, like all our low-impact permits throughout the county, essentially the approval authority is essentially mine as the community development director, but because of the nature of any one particular project, before I'm empowered to make any decision, I would be wise, if not required, to go and get input from the Planning Commission as a whole first. So there would be input and review. So nothing's done in secret. It will all be revealed and processed in our normal way. But the council, as a client, on the P3 side, has a lot of influence early in the process, as a final approval authority, only under very certain and limited conditions.
Okay, Peter, I'm out of time, but I'll talk to you next month. Thanks.
Thank you, Leslie. Bye now.
That's Summit County Community Development Director Peter Barnes. The Wasatch County Council meets tomorrow in a work session starting at 3 o'clock. And on the phone with a preview of the meeting, I have County Manager Dustin Graybaugh. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
First up, an update from UDOT's Craig Hancock on the Heber Valley Environmental Impact Statement, the EIS. What can you tell us about this update?
I don't think UDOT intends to share any major updates. They're making themselves available to answer any questions the council might have.
Yeah, so have you seen the latest draft of the EIS? I mean, does it incorporate some of the changes that both Wasatch County and Heber City have asked for?
Yes, I believe UDOT has incorporated a few items of feedback, specifically sections of the bypass that will go through the north fields. They're looking at moving them further to the east. And then the south section along 1300 South by Walmart, both Heber City and Wasatch County raised some concerns there. So UDOT is looking at some alternatives that would have less impacts and maybe a lower elevation interchange over Southfield Road, maybe even preserving Southfield Road.
Yeah, so any idea of what the timeline is on this?
I believe they're still aiming to be complete with this by the end of the year.
Okay, so that they could move with construction as soon as next spring?
I think that's pretty unlikely. What this step does is it makes it eligible to be added to UDOT's kind of priority list, but that list is several years long right now, and they would need to identify some really significant funding. So I think we're probably a number of years out from the project actually starting or anything like that.
Yeah. Okay, later on, a discussion, and you're looking for some council direction on a Wasatch County historian position. Does this position exist yet?
So So not yet. This is something we budgeted for through our 2026 budgeting process, but we only identified funding for either half a year of a full-time position or an entire year of a part-time position. Staff's recommendation is that we would have a better time recruiting a full-time position for someone who's qualified in this area. But I know the council is sensitive about costs and priorities, so we're going to have a discussion about the merits of both of those options.
All right, so what would this person be responsible for?
I think primarily it would be coordinating with all of the various historical groups that exist in Wasatch County and archiving any Wasatch County specific items. I know for some of the county council, when we were going through our old fire station, there were some historical documents related to kind of the creation of the fire district. And there's no one person who is a great repository for those types of things. And what we're hoping to do is get someone who would be able to help educate the public, display these things, and kind of gather the information in a way that is useful, that we can store it, and that we can share it with others.
Sure. Now, are there grants available for the position in addition to what the county has budgeted for it?
I think we feel like most of the grants that would be available would be probably the work product of this person. So what we're hoping to do is use this person's salary, potentially their compensation, as a match for any future grants for, some preservation efforts or display efforts or things like that.
Okay. Do you have any space for a county museum or something like that?
You know, right now we actually partner with the Daughters of the Utah Pioneers, and we have a museum on Main Street, just right next to Main Street Park. I think if we were looking at something else like that, we have some space in our new administration building in the lobby that we have specifically kind of carved out for public displays of historical nature or things like that.
All right. Later on, a discussion and presentation of the Trails, Arts, and Parks allocations and expenditures. It looks like the fund's raising more than $1 million a year now. Where does that money come from?
So that money is a sales tax that voters approved. It's a 0.1%, and it's generated on most transactions, excluding things like gas and groceries. And so that money's generated whenever someone purchases something in Wasatch County. When we first checked, when we were kind of going through the process, generally about half of these funds is generated by visitors. And we think as, areas like the Mayflower East Village comes online, that'll significantly decrease the local taxpayers' cost. So it kind of is a pretty efficient bang for our buck on these types of programs.
Yeah, and then how are those dollars allocated between Wasatch County, Heber City, and Midway, who are participating in this?
So Midway gets about, 17%. Heber City gets just under half, and Wasatch County gets remaining, which I think is a little over a third of the funds.
Okay. And how have you spent, or how has the council spent the money?
So the majority of it has gone through the TAP board's grant process. And so those have been a variety of grants to trails, parks, and art programs. There's a lot of, I think, really top-notch performances that are being done by Tent Valley Theater and others that were able to support things like the 1776 play for the America 250 and things like that.
All right. And any other upcoming projects that the county would hope to see funded with these dollars?
We're just in the process now, and we talked with the TAP board last night about some trail maintenance projects that we're using these funds for. This was kind of one of the pressing needs for considering this sales tax, and something we went to voters to get so that we could offset tax burden from, property taxpayers or other tax sources, and having this sales tax pay for this trail maintenance in a way that, again, is really efficient for our own taxpayers.
Okay. Let's see. The council will also get a report from the Military Installation Development Authority, MIDA, about, I'm thinking it's the Deer, it just says DVE. Is that the Deer Valley East project?
Yeah, so this is actually in-house. So this is our own MIDA coordinator, Richard Breitenbeaker, who's going to be presenting a little bit about the finances and our own financial projections coming out of that East Village area.
Okay. So these are, again, the sales tax projections. Are they coming in at what you had expected when, this had been approved?
Yeah, I think this year we're expecting to get at least $1 million out of some direct revenue from the project area. What this presentation is going into are kind of what the other revenue sources. So we get direct contributions from MIDA through portions of the property tax increment, and that's what that $1 million is coming from. But when there is a home that purchases something off Amazon, or eventually when there are businesses there and those generate sales tax, this is intended to kind of give us some projections of what those long-term revenues might look like.
Mm-hmm. And and again, after the 40 years, I guess we're probably down to, what, 38 years, but all of that revenue would then come to the taxing agencies again?
Yeah, so the tax increment does last for 40 years. It's kind of on a property-by-property basis. So the increment on the Hilton Canopy, for instance, it's opening this year, will start this year, and it'll be 40 years from now. And yes, those all show up as new growth to those taxing entities at the end of that increment period.
Okay. Now, the way that this agreement works, I believe it was MIDA receiving about 75% of all of the new assessed valuation tax dollars, with 25% going towards other taxing agencies, including Wasatch County, the fire district, and the school district. Of that 25%, are you getting a full 25%, or are you splitting that 25% with all of the other agencies?
So the county's portion of the tax increment is a little more complicated than the others. So the school district, fire district, Parks and Rec, all the other taxing entities that are here get just kind of a straight 25%. The county's 25% goes into a bucket along with some other revenue sources that would not normally be available to the county, including municipal energy taxes. And those, there are some administrative costs that come out of that bucket before then the county gets it. So it's a little bit complicated.
Okay. All right. But that's raising $1 million a year for the county at this point.
Yeah. And we expect that to go up from here.
Yeah. And that, again, all goes basically into the general fund?
Yeah. So that's part of the selling point, is that this is going to help us pay for some of these essential services in a way that we don't have to go back to property taxpayers for.
Okay. And as we've reported, a decision was made last week with regard to the Maverick Rock mining decision. Can you kind of walk us through that? There was a legal settlement, but there's still an ongoing legal challenge here.
Yeah, so the county is still in the process of appealing what was the local district court's ruling on this case. So Wasatch County is of the position that state code does not or should not allow this type of use of the vested mining rights. Now, we've litigated that over the last year and a half or so, and the district court ruled against us. So what we did last week was, we feel like the best course of action was to kind of dual track these things, in that we are continuing to pursue our appeal. But because we had this district court ruling against us, we felt like we needed to get at least some mitigation while the mine proceeded, because state code doesn't allow us the ability to just stop this and say, no, you can't do this. So what the settlement agreement did was guaranteed that there would be these mitigation measures that we negotiated with Maverick Rock in the meantime while we are working on this appeal.
Yeah, so what can happen under this settlement agreement?
I mean, it's really just kind of ticking a part of the state code process. So what this does is it sets those mitigation measures, and then as long as they abide by those mitigation measures, they're able to proceed under the vested mining right. Now, if we were to prevail with our appeal, that would be void, and they would have to come back through and apply for a new application under something like a conditional use permit.
Okay, so it sounds like they're digging for what? Building materials?
I think that is the majority of what they're going to pull out of there is gravel and aggregate.
Yeah. And can you locate this for us? I mean, it sounds like it's kind of on top of a hill overlooking the Heber Valley.
Yeah, so it's actually, if you're headed on Highway 40 south towards Strawberry, up towards Daniel's Summit, it'll be on the right side, kind of just past the very edge of Daniel there. So there are a few developments along that. It's kind of the southwest side of 40. The last neighborhood there, the next properties over, are the properties kind of in question.
All right. And some of that mitigation you're talking about, I guess, is concern about traffic with big trucks hauling material, dust coming from the area. What else? Noise? I mean...
Yeah, one of the unfortunate limitations in state code is that the county's mitigation measures aren't allowed to extend beyond the requirements of the state permits that already exist. So there are a number of agencies. There's the Division of Oil, Gas, and Mining. There's the Department of Air Quality, Department of Water Quality. All of these entities already have permitting standards. And so what the county is doing is we are trying to require kind of something we would argue are not higher standards, but maybe some different standards in those areas. So we actually went out to the public and we hired our own consultants to try and crowdsource as much information we could. And unfortunately, we have a very limited scope of what we're asked. So yes, it has to do with water, has to do with air quality, ensuring that they're complying with those state level permits. And we felt like this was the best way to get as much as we could, given the ruling that we already received from the district court.
Okay. And where are you on the appeal track? Any hearing been set?
So, no, not yet. We have filed the appeal. It's still in, I think, relatively early stages. So I don't think we have any dates set yet, but it is something that we are actively pursuing with our own attorneys and then with our insurance's attorneys as well.
Okay. Dustin, anything else you wanted to mention?
Not today.
All right. Thanks for your time.
Thanks.
That's Wasatch County Manager Dustin Grabow. The studio now with an update from Sinmut Land Conservancy. I have CEO Cheryl Fox. Good morning, Cheryl.
Good morning.
Well, let's start with the whole purpose of saving land. That sounds like you have got a couple of easements that you're
That's right.
close on.
We hope to be able to finish these within the month of July, keeping our fingers crossed. We've been working for a long time with a family just south of Colville. And we've been informed now that the federal government has finally approved that project to close. It's about 2,200 acres. We've been working on this for a number of years with this family. And we thought it was going to close in December of 2024, but something got stuck in the system. And with the many changes to staffing at the federal government, we were not able to solve the problem. We did finally get some help from Congressman Blake Moore's office. And again, we were told that now it's been approved for closing. So we're excited about this, especially because this family is lined up to do another 4,000-acre easement contiguous to this first one. So we're really excited about that and really grateful for the patience of these landowners to stick with the process and go through it again and again. So, and also Summit County is a part of that with the general open space bond to help keep those spaces open and the creeks flowing and the streams streaming and the springing.
Yeah. So these is this property along the river at all? Or?
No, it's up in the hills in the rangeland. But that is actually, you know, that is where the headwaters, these are the properties that collect snow and it seeps down into the ground and it comes out again in streams and creeks and eventually in the Weber River.
Okay. And you said it is the same family?
Same family has a second property, the same range company, yes. Yeah. You know, it's a 17 family members, cousins, and several of them have done easements with us before on other properties. So it's always an honor to be asked to come back again, especially because these processes are long, drawn out, and very frustrating. So,
all right. So what happens here? I mean, they'll receive some funding?
They get some compensation for basically we're buying the development rights off of the property. So they get paid for that, and then they can continue ranching and farming. They can continue their operation. They can pass it down to heirs. The property could be sold, but the next owner has to maintain it as a ranch.
Okay. Let's see.
We have a second property also.
Okay.
That we're working to close. It's just under 100 acres in the Camas Valley. Really excited about this because, again, very critical wetland area. We've been working with this family for also quite a long time. And we've put in the final documents to complete the easement on that property as well. And in the Camas Valley, if you drive over 248 and come down into the valley, it's all green and beautiful. But it is, if you look on a plat map, a jigsaw puzzle of ownership. So being able to save that valley, it really is like building a quilt, you know, one patch at a time. So a couple of years ago, we did another 99-acre, 100-acre property. This one is just a couple lots away. So we're building that patchwork quilt.
Okay, and this is the property off to the left as you're driving into Camas then?
So as you drive down into Camas, there's a big 183 acres of the Yerd North Meadows, which we placed in an easement, again, with Summit County at the end of 2025. We got federal funding for that. This is a little further to the north in the middle of the valley.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. You also have lots of opportunities for folks to kind of find out what you got going on. Let's talk a little bit about the Hop Hunters.
That's right. Hops Hunters are our signature summertime activity. We go every other Wednesday. We take people out to one of our conservation easement properties, and people get an opportunity to see the ground that we protect together as a community, look at the wildflowers, and see if there are hops growing. Eventually, in September or late August, we'll have a harvest. And Offset Beer this year will be brewing the Hoppy Hour and hosting our Hoppy Hour. So the next hike is tomorrow, July 8th, that is tomorrow, at the Rail Trail. And so we'll meet there. And then on July 22nd, we're having one of our president emeriti, Michael O'Malley, who will take people for a walk up in Empire Canyon, which is full of history and all sorts of interesting things. And Michael is a consummate storyteller. These hikes take about 90 minutes, and we do ask people to sign up at wesaveland.org because we do have to limit the number of people who can attend.
Right.
Because otherwise, you know, we can't have a huge crowd on the trail.
And these wild hops, where do they actually come from? I mean, are they natural vegetation?
So the hops were brought here by miners and the other people who worked in a mining camp and planted over 100 years ago. And they've naturalized, and they are a perennial, so they come back year after year.
Okay, and you do have a date for Hoppy Hour, September 24th, so save the date.
That's right, save the date, September 24th at Offset Beer.
Okay, you're also going to be out in the Heber Market this week.
That's right. You know, the Summit Land Conservancy saves land all across northern Utah, and we are reaching out to new communities. We'll be at the Heber Market on July 10th, and we'd love for people in the Wasatch County to come up and meet us and say hello. We also just sponsored the Oakley Rodeo over the last weekend, got to meet a lot of new friends out there. The rodeo is so important for the Oakley community. We're doing a lot of work along the Weber River through Oakley. We felt like it was important for us to be part of the community and show up for them at what was important to them too.
Okay, and tell me a little bit more about your Mindful Mondays.
So Mindful Mondays are forest bathing. You have an opportunity to go out in nature and do some meditation, slow down a little bit, be real present with yourself and whatever is happening in nature. And these are really restorative. So again, people can sign up at wesaveland.org. Our next one is July 20th up at Empire Pass. And it takes about 90 minutes, and we do charge a little bit for these because we pay somebody to help us out.
Okay. Do people need to meet you up there at Empire Pass?
Yeah. Yeah. So. Details will be on our website.
Okay.
After people sign up.
All right. And also coming up this month is your Moonshine Adventure. Seems like we did these more in the winter, but you're gonna.
Yeah, we used to do them in the winter, you know, hiking up the mountain. And they're so fun and so popular that we decided to go ahead and extend them into the summer. You have to wait a lot longer for it to get dark in the summer. But we do have great opportunities. This month or last month, we've partnered with Mountain Trails. Next month, we're partnering with Wasatch Trails Foundation. This is fun and free, and it will start at the Boulder Basin Trailhead, which is located in the Wasatch State Park at 7 p.m. And again, we ask people to sign up on our website in advance.
Okay. And how far will you be hiking?
That is a really good question, and I can't tell you.
Okay.
But it takes about 90 minutes. So
yeah. And do you need to get, will you need to have a park pass then to to park there?
That is also something that I cannot tell you. We'll have to let you know.
Okay, and it's probably online.
It is.
All right, and tell us more. You've got your biggest fundraiser of the year coming up at the end of the month.
I like to say that the Blue Sky Bash is the most fun way to save open space. It is our signature event. It is a really important fundraiser for Summit Land Conservancy. I always say that it is contributions from individuals that make it possible for us to save the thousands of acres that we save every year. As we navigate the different processes, you know, it takes a long time, but, you know, staff show up every day, and it is contributions from individuals that really make it possible. Gifts from individuals are leveraged about 10 times because we're able to bring in these large federal, you know, millions of dollars in federal funding. So the Blue Sky Bash this year is July 31st. That's a Friday. Tickets are on sale, but we only have a few left, so I would encourage people to gather their friends and decide that if they want to come for that. We also offer a shuttle if people, because we don't really want people to have to drive all the way out to the Blue Sky Ranch in Wanship, and we want people to be able to really enjoy themselves when they're there. So we've been doing the shuttle since the beginning of this event, which started in 2015. So you can park your car at the Park City High School, we whisk you out to the event, and then the shuttles start coming back as soon as the auction is over. However, there is also line dancing after the auction and the big event, and that has proved to be very popular in the last couple of years. So it's a beautiful event. It starts with a cocktail hour out on the patio. Our friends at Hawkwatch International come and they bring several raptors that people can meet. Sometimes they've had great horned owls, sometimes they've had eagles, and always our friends are very knowledgeable, and that's a beautiful hour out in the open space. We go inside, we have an amazing dinner, we have our same auctioneer, Larry Flynn, coming back. We have a couple of amazing auction items. It's not a very long auction. We have about 6 items. One of the keys is always the Bill White Teepee Dinner, which you can cannot get in very many places. And the Teepee Dinner is really an incredible experience up in the high mountains in the wintertime. We will have 2 Bill Whites in the room. Bill White, who owns restaurants here in Park City, as well as Bill White, who was the landowner of the monastery project that we did, that we finished in 2022. And Bill White of the monastery was the first landowner to successfully lease agricultural water back to the Great Salt Lake.
Oh, yay.
Yeah. And I think we will likely also have a congressional representative in the room as well.
Okay. Cheryl, anything else?
You know, it's a beautiful time to be in Park City, and we hope people will come out and connect with the open spaces that make this place so beautiful.
Okay. Appreciate your time. We'll see you next month.
Thank you.
Cheryl Fox, again, is the CEO of Summit Land Conservancy. While construction on Park City's affordable employee housing units on Marsac Avenue will cost about 10% more than expected, KPCW's Christine Weller has more about that.
Park City has been redeveloping an almost 2-acre property on Marsac Avenue since April 2025. Due to unforeseen circumstances, the project will cost almost $370,000 more than expected. Peace House was on the lot for 2 decades, but the domestic violence shelter found a new home in 2019. So Park City purchased the property and is turning it into a triplex for city employees. Deputy City Manager Heather Sneddon said the project recently ran into some unexpected costs.
We've discovered some existing conditions that have required some changes to this contract in order for us to address those challenges.
The partial demolition phase of the project uncovered conditions that cost an extra $161,000. Another $208,000 was added after a fire inspection this year, which found extra sprinkler heads and a new water line connection were needed in the garage. The new completion date for the Marsac triplex is in the end of August. It will cost almost $2 million in all, or about 10% more than the original price tag of about $1.6 million. Sneddon said the triplex will support the city's goal to allow the workforce to live locally.
Our goal right now, that to the extent that we can meet it, is to prioritize about 80% affordable rentals and 20% for sale units.
She said the city previously focused on providing for sale affordable units, but that's changed over time as short-term rentals and second homes have become more common. Park City Municipal is a financial supporter of KPCW. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
Applications are now open for the next Park City Leadership Class. The program invests in emerging leaders with civics-based learning opportunities. The award-winning program is accepting applications for Class 33 through August 21st. Director Scott Van Hartsveld says the program helps people who live or work in Summit County get more involved. With more than 900 past graduates, including many local leaders and elected officials, Van Hartsveld said Leadership Park City has become part of the fabric of the community. Founder Miles Radiman designed the program, he says, to focus on civics and leadership.
Miles always used to say that good communities invest in infrastructure and great communities invest in people. I think that that's what, more than anything, this program is.
The program features monthly workshops starting in October, covering local and state topics. Each class also designs and develops a project to improve some aspect of the Park City area. Those interested can learn more at two open houses, August 3rd or the 8th, in the Park City Library's community room starting at 5:30.